Hello and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Feature. I'm your host, Tom Majeur. Today we will talk about a very serious matter, sex trafficking. Sex trafficking in America, right here at home and around the world. My guest is the president of Child Impact International. His name is Dr. Tom L. Evans. The ministry is located in Chattanooga, Tennessee, Collegedale to be exact. Dr. Evans, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
This is part of a series. We're outlining this is how extensive this topic is, and I'm actually became aware of this from your perspective, from your ministry, in a booklet that showed up at the ministry, Sex Trafficking in America, How to Identify and Prevent Exploitation. We're going to be referring to this several times, and we're going to give our listeners a chance. They can go on your website. I have been doing research. I've been doing interviews on this particular subject for over 2 years. And this is the most comprehensive, up-to-date information that I think our listeners need to have. If you have children, if you care about children, if you have grandchildren, or if you have a role in leading and guiding young people in a Christian education, a school, or church, this is an important resource. Dr. Evans, would you have a word of prayer for us, and then we'll have a little bit of instructions about who should be listening to this program and age appropriateness?
Yes, absolutely. Dear Lord, we want to pray that your presence will be here with us as we look at this important topic. May you enlighten us. Please make us aware of how we can respond to make a difference in protecting those who would be victims of human trafficking today. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Dr. Evans, again, this is a sensitive subject you know all too well. You've done a tremendous amount of research into this subject and produced this booklet. How should parents and guardians who are listening to this program right now, or may give reference to it, it will be archived on our website. The easiest way to remember is str.fm. str.fm or strongtowerradio.org audio archive pages. What discretion should parents and child guardians have in listening to this difficult subject we're talking about today?
Sure. We try to keep the content we share at PG-13. I would say definitely parents need to share some of this content with children that are younger than 13, but I do speak often at high schools, and so, you know, starting in grade 9, we end up presenting this content to young people.
Now, Dr. Evans, our listeners, it's important to relate to you. Give us a background of your academic, your personal growth in history that brought you to this point today.
Sure. Well, I think what qualifies me the most for this topic is that I'm a father of 9 children. When my wife and I were dating, she said she wanted to have 10 kids. I was really shocked to hear this. I didn't believe it could possibly be true, but I took my chances, and in reality, she won. But she wasn't suggesting that all those would be biological children, but we became involved in adoption. And that has been a huge blessing to our family. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of unknown challenges when you adopt a child, but that has certainly been part of our journey. And, you know, you end up with kids who have been allowed to have access to anything in the orphanages or group homes that they've been a part of, coming to a home where there's structures and rules and limits on social media and all those kind of things. And it's to how to navigate that with your kids and how to have those kind of conversations, has really probably qualified me the most for this particular topic. But I have a background in pastoral ministry. I have been involved in church planting. I've been a seminary professor. I've been a church leader. And this is my first role outside of church employment in a nonprofit. And I've been involved with Child Impact now for over 4 years. And part of what attracted me to Child Impact was the focus on fighting human trafficking.
Now, Dr. Tom, it seems like if I listen to your career history, you like to be close to people and get involved in real issues?
Sure. I would say from my very first ministry years, I got involved in sponsoring kids and promoting that to others and making sure that kids that are in the highest need are having someone halfway around the world that has more resources and ability financially to totally change their world for a few dollars a month compared to what we earn here. And so my whole life I've really had a passion for the underserved. And that has included doing respite care for foster children, hosting exchange students, going on mission trips to different countries, but probably most exemplified in becoming involved personally in adoption.
Now, having 9 children, that is fairly unusual today. If you go back several generations, that was not that unusual. That your wife and you must have a very, very big heart. A person who has a large family in today's environment, it's not an accident. It's planned usually, and must have a certain mindset or certain compassion for other people, and particularly young people.
That's true. We did have one of our sons that we adopted actually passed away from leukemia. Mm-hmm. And so that he's a special needs boy, but that really broke our hearts. And we actually did the next adoption because he wanted to grow up and adopt. That was his dream. And he wasn't able to do that. Wanted sisters. He really wanted sisters. So the next two we adopted are girls, and they just actually came home in January.
Wow.
Nine months ago.
Just to go just a little further on this, we're going to have a 6-part series. So we're going to have a lot of chance to talk about a lot of important subjects, and there are different aspects of this. Just staying on this just a little bit longer, how many are biological? And how many are adopted?
Five biological and 4 adopted.
And then how many are Americans, and how many of them are foreign born?
Well, we speak seven different languages in our family. So, but some of our kids speak 2 languages. So, yeah, my wife is Brazilian. So, you know, she's got the Portuguese, and then we've got our oldest adopted boy speaks Latvian and Russian, and then our oldest adopted girl speaks Turkish and Bulgarian, and then my wife also speaks Spanish, and our biological sons have picked up some Portuguese, and even the oldest biological son speaks some Russian. So yeah, there's a lot of different languages going on in our home.
I sure hope the parents can speak some of these languages.
I'm just English. Google Translate is fantastic.
All right. Hey, let's get into the subject. How did you become involved in fighting human trafficking?
Well, I was, it was a topic that I was aware of, and I had an uneasy feeling that the church that denomination I belonged to was not doing very much in this area. Because anytime I heard about it, it was a different denomination or maybe a secular organization that's doing something about it. And so when I heard about Child Impact International and a focus that they called Operation Child Rescue, that intrigued me because it was really the first time to hear about an organization within my denomination saying, hey, we want to really make a difference in this space. And so as I began to explore that, I discovered that they had three projects. They were all in India and really had this name and this passion for about 10 years, but really a very small footprint in terms of the number of projects. And so when I accepted over 4 years ago to come and join Child Impact, one of my immediate goals was to grow this part of what Child Impact does. Child Impact has a lot of work for 59 years in the area of sponsoring impoverished children globally to be able to have a Christian education, a very meaningful work that way. But I had really had this desire to move into this area of fighting human trafficking. So that now has become a reality and much more of a major focus of the organization.
What is the difference? We use the term human trafficking. We also have used the term sex trafficking. How do they overlap, and which is the bigger of the two?
Human trafficking is bigger. It's broader. Sex trafficking is a form of human trafficking. We actually work with all three major types of human trafficking, which, of course, would be sex trafficking. Then there are also child brides, or child marriage is a form of human trafficking. And then finally, there's labor trafficking. Now, there's many other subsets of human trafficking, but those are the three big ones.
Just to give our listeners an idea of the outline that we plan to do, is today is child internet vulnerabilities. The next one will be porn, the financial fuel. The third one part will be foster children vulnerabilities. Then we're going to go to the global, that's the U.S. side, and the American side. And then the last three global will be global sex trafficking. The fifth one will be labor trafficking, and the sixth one will be child brides and child marriage, which you talked about. What are the stereotypes that Americans have on human trafficking?
You know, I think the stereotypes would be what we hear in the news. And I think what we need to recognize is what's in the news typically are the things that are unusual. And they're in the news because they're different. And so really, I ask people, you know, what kind of vehicle is a human trafficking driving? So if I were to ask you that question, what would you likely say?
It would be a white panel van.
There we go. That's it. And they're in a parking lot, right?
Yep. Near a school or a public place.
Yeah, or, you know, one of these big box retailers. They're just kind of cruising along the perimeter of the parking lot. And so we get this idea that traffickers inside, or a couple traffickers are inside this van, and they jump out and they snatch a girl. You know, kind of she's unaware that, you know, and she, you know, somehow they sneak up on her, and then she's gone. And, you know, then they're out searching, where did this girl go, what happened? Does that happen? Absolutely. Is that the most common form of human trafficking in America? Not even close. And so even the view of them secretly jumping out and snatching a girl is the wrong picture, because the more likely scenario is a girl approaching a vehicle and her taking initiative to meet someone that she thinks is someone other than who they are. And so she has somehow been groomed online and has now agreed to meet someone in real life. And that is the main challenge with human trafficking, is that it happens behind closed doors, often in our kids' bedrooms when they're online.
And on their cell phones.
Sure.
Now, what is sex trafficking?
Well, sex trafficking, there's a number of definitions to it, but broadly it's when somebody is forced to produce sexual content or forced to perform sex acts against their will. And in this case, they're producing money for someone else. But there is a more nuanced definition, and that is that anyone under the age of 18 who is involved in sex work, even if it is seen from their perspective to be voluntary, it is considered to be human trafficking. Anyone under the age of 18 is not considered as someone who can give permission or allow someone else to traffic or to use them this way, even if they've given permission, it's still considered to be human trafficking.
We talked about that. We're going to talk about the first three episodes will be about here in the United States, and the last three will be global. How big is human trafficking globally?
Globally, there are 50 million human trafficking victims. That's 20% greater than the population of California. So it's a massive number of individuals. For Americans, it's a little bit challenging because, first of all, our percentage, our piece of the pie, although large, it's 1 million individuals. That's 2% of the global victims. So you take a country like India, 2 in every 5 victims globally live in India. So, you know, America has a very thin, very small piece of that pie. But for us, it's takes a very different form than it does in developing countries. In developing countries, poverty is the driver for human trafficking. In the United States, the internet is the driver for human trafficking, which means kind of this phrase where we say out of sight, out of mind. That really applies to the issue of human trafficking. So most Americans have never seen human trafficking taking place. But we all have actually seen human trafficking victims. We just don't realize that they are. And so it's a very different dynamic for us in America.
What we talked about the stereotype of the white panel van. Are there other stereotypes compared to reality?
You know, it's that's an interesting question. I'm trying to figure out how I would answer that. I think probably the biggest stereotype is we think our kids are safe when they're at home. You know, that's kind of a thinking we have as parents. If we can keep our kids at home, you know, I have kids, if they're out late, we just feel so much, you know, more relieved when at least they get home. But our home, if they have a cell phone in their room unsupervised, our home may be the most dangerous place where our kids are at in terms of this topic.
What should a parent do about that, or guardian?
Well, we know our kids live on their cell phones today. It's a very different world than you and I grew up in. And it's their connection. It's their relational connection with their peers. And so, you know, some parents go to the extreme of saying, my child just can't have a cell phone. And it's very hard for our kids to control. For example, a 17-year-old girl spends almost 6 hours a day on social media. And you kind of ask the question, well, does she even have time for anything else? You know, what about homework?
Yes.
What about helping around the house? You know, are there, you know, it's just, it's all consuming for our kids. And so, you know, one of the first things we need to do as parents is to be aware, where are our children, you know, where are they going on their phones? What sites are they visiting? What games are they playing? Who are they chatting with? And so this is a very important first step, is to really open those channels of communication with your kids. So our 17-year-old girl that we adopted, she was 16 when we adopted her. She already had 22,000 followers on TikTok.
Mm.
And this is the first wake-up call to parents. Your kids are not on Facebook. Facebook is for old folks. And so if you're looking at your kids' account on Facebook, that's not where they're at. And a few kids have accounts there, but they're on different platforms. They're going to be on TikTok or Instagram or Snapchat or some kind of a gaming platform that may have a chat format connected to it. And so we need to know where our kids are at and what they're accessing on their phones or on their computers. So having those open conversations are very important. So with my daughter, who's now 17, We looked at what she was posting, and we just asked her to consider carefully that she doesn't want to attract the wrong kinds of people by what she posts. And so she pulled a few videos down, but to be honest, she'd actually been making fairly decent decisions, especially considering that she didn't have parents to supervise. And so, you know, she's come to me before and said, "Dad, this person wants to be my friend. I don't know who he is, and I see it's some adult. And he happens to be friends with her other peers." And I'm like, "Well, why is this adult friends with so many of her peers?" And I said, "I don't know who this person is. I don't think you should be friends with him." And so, you know, she's learning how to protect herself on social media. We have not removed it from her, but even at 17 years old, she leaves our phone or her phone in our bedroom at night. Mm-hmm. She does not take that up to her bedroom and use it unsupervised at night. Now, our kids that are over 18, they keep their phones in their rooms. So there is, you know, the point where they do become adults, and that happens. But we as parents need to be very careful and yet reasonable with our kids when it comes to social media.
There's several topics we've got to touch on fairly quickly. The gaming platforms, what's so dangerous about games?
Well, that's really where the young kids become vulnerable to human traffickers. In fact, there's a study that looks at about over 150,000 child porn sites or pages. And that study identified who the perpetrators are targeting. And they primarily target, first and primarily target 11 to 13 year old girls. So we talked earlier about what age, you know, should children be aware of this content. Well, if you wait till your child's a teenager, you've waited a little bit too long. And that's where online games become kind of a gateway, because human traffickers are on these sites, perpetrators are on these sites, and they become a hunting ground for these individuals that want to harm children. So they can play games with your kids and act like they're, you know, from their neighborhood or across town or a nearby city, and they can pretend to be somebody who they are not. And then they build these relationships and they begin communicating with your child as a friend in platforms like Discord or Twitch or Slack, even Reddit. And so our kids can end up being groomed. And the FBI indicates that 89% of sexual advances toward children happen in these forums where our kids end up as a result of playing games like Roblox, Minecraft, and Fortnite.
So they're basically playing on another channel. If we go back to CB, we'll go to another channel and talk, and that is an unmonitored channel.
Right, and they've been friendly. I mean, all kids have bad days, and here's somebody who listened to them, asked them how their day was, try to cheer them up when they're feeling down. These individuals are experts at grooming. In fact, one shocking thing that developed after I wrote this resource is that Roblox sued an individual who was a whistleblower. So this guy was going online and setting up these perpetrators to identify them. And then he would report them after he identified who they are. And Roblox sued him because of this. They said, "It's our job to do that. It's not yours. We don't need any vigilantes out there, you know, trying to take justice in their own hands." And really, they should have probably hired this guy if they really are concerned about child safety. Put this guy on their payroll and utilize his skills to help keep kids safe. But that's obviously not what they're interested in.
What is the concern? Is it the games that the young people are playing, or is it the people they're playing with?
Yeah, the games in themselves, I mean, any online game can be fairly addictive, so there's always the time element. But in terms of the most of the content of these games. Now, there are some different subsets of the games that you can get into that are fairly, harmful. If you look over the shoulder of your kid playing Roblox, most of the time you're not going to see something that would be alarming or worrisome to you. So it's really the fact that there are predators on these gaming platforms that are purposely there to groom children. And the younger kids are more susceptible because they're not as alert or aware of the potential dangers.
There's three or four more subjects that we have here, and I think we're going to have to roll into another segment of this. How big an issue is the issue of child porn?
It's significant. Interestingly, the country that hosts most of the sites, 70% of child porn sites originate in the Netherlands. And if you take all of Europe, you're up to about 90% of child porn sites originate in Europe, but the number one consumer is the United States. And so this is a growing concern in terms of the amount of material that is available and is accessed. And so so this is from 2020. There were 300,000 reports of pornographic pages called CSAM, which is child sexual abuse material. And so this is where the research comes from that shares that the age of 11 to 13 is that age is the one that's targeted by these individuals.
Well, Dr. Tom Evans is joining us on this topic of sex trafficking, and we're talking about children. Please tell our listeners you're with Child Impact International out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Tell our listeners about this booklet that you produced on this particular topic.
Sure. Well, I tried to be as comprehensive as possible, and the way I was able to do that is really speaking with my own kids, who are particularly those that are in the 18 to 22-year-old age group, and say, is there anything I'm missing? What else should be included here? And they gave me more. They said, you need to uncover this, you need to cover that, because they're more aware than I am. It's like me trying to go on Facebook versus where they actually spend their time on social media. And so I need to know from those that are being exposed to these kind of things, and particularly my children, were very helpful in this resource. So it's 32 pages. You can download it for free at childimpact.org/booklet. Or you can call our office at 423-910-0667, and you can order print copies for $5 each.
And your organization website is childimpact.org.
That's correct.
Well, listeners, you've been listening to the first of a series on sex trafficking in America and the world. On Strong Tower Radio Network, I'm your host, Tom Majeure. Until next time, bye now.